Good morning. I want to begin by welcoming our newest staff member, Matt Hench, new chief of staff in the governor's office. It's his first official day on the job, although he's been doing a lot of unofficial things already. But we're glad to have Matt on board. He comes with a wealth of background and experience, and I'm very confident he'll do a great job. You know, over the last few decades, Iowa has initiated many pioneering policies to help encourage the growth and innovation in renewable energy sector. I remember back in the 80s when I first took office, when we were very energy dependent state. We were a state that had import energy, and now we produce more ethanol than we consume in gasoline. We're the leader in ethanol, we're the leader in biodiesel, we're the leader in wind energy as well. For every example that we've instituted a variety, and we've instituted a variety of different things, tax incentives to level the playing field for biofuels, such as ethanol and biodiesel. In 1983, we're the first state in the nation to have a renewable energy standard for electric in generation. I think 20-some states have copied us, and so Iowa has been a leader, and today we want to continue to be a leader. We're excited to announce the latest renewable energy effort, a new E30 and biodiesel initiative which we're going to call Fueling Our Future, that we hope will be part of a coordinated regional effort here in the Midwest. The Midwest has pretty much led the nation in this in terms of renewable energy, and we want to again with this initiative. With this initiative, Iowans will have additional access to higher blends of ethanol and biodiesel. And it's my understanding that 30% is kind of the sweet spot in terms of the best fuel efficiency with an ethanol blend. This will help our farmers. It will help our communities. It will help our economy in producing, processing, and profiting. And it is good for our environment. As the chairman of the Governor's Biofuel Coalition, and a longtime supporter of biofuels, I believe that Iowa can again show national leadership in this new Fueling Our Future initiative. Iowa's success in biofuels is due to our abundant natural resources, the hard work that goes into its production, and the choice that consumers make in supporting locally produced renewable biofuels. The biofuels industry has given strength to our economy. And this new initiative, which is a great partnership between the Iowa Department of Agriculture and the Iowa Department of Transportation, will again continue our leadership. So I want to turn it over to the Lieutenant Governor to give you a little more of the details on this Fueling Our Futures initiative. Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds.
Well, good morning, and thank you, Governor Branstad. And we're really glad to have joining us today Secretary Norther and Director Trombino for the important biofuels announcement. We hope that this initiative, Fueling Our Future, will build on the history of establishing innovative renewable energy policies. The initiative will be supported through a public-private partnership that utilizes current funding, but in a new way, to expand the market for mid-level biofuels blends. The partnership will be supported by the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Transportation, Iowa State University, and the Iowa Renewable Fuels Infrastructure Board. The funding comes from the U.S. Department of Transportation for congestion, mitigation, and air quality. And our initiative will redirect $250,000 to further leverage state dollars in the existing rural renewable infrastructure program. These funds will be available through an application process to the Iowa Renewable Fuels Infrastructure Board and will help provide more blender pumps containing E30. This effort will also help with improving air quality, as E30 is a cleaner burning fuel in vehicles compared to petroleum-based gasoline. In regards to evaluating success, Iowa State University will work closely on this initiative to review project consumer perceptions and to impact the increased access to mid-level biofuels blending options. We encourage fuel retailers and farm cooperatives to further consider this program as we focus on the future of renewable fuels. We look forward to the installation of these new E30 blender pumps at locations around Iowa next spring. And at this point, it's my pleasure to bring to the podium Secretary Northey.
Thank you, Governor and Lieutenant Governor. Thank you all for being here this morning. As Secretary of Ag, I'd like the Governor and Lieutenant Governor get around to all 99 counties, get a great chance to be able to see the agricultural production out there. And certainly, Iowa's a leader in agricultural production, usually a leader in corn and soybean production. We'll see what it's like after the harvest this year. But we're hearing some good reports. We're also, as you know, a leader in renewable fuels. And it's very important to be able to maintain that leadership position, not only on the production side, but on the consumption side, and the opportunity to be able to learn and grow and create more opportunities on that side as well. So with 41 ethanol plants across the state, we produce about 25% of all the ethanol produced in the country. And as the governor said, producing more ethanol than we use in gasoline. So it's certainly in our interest to use more of that ethanol, that Iowa produced ethanol, in our gasoline and find a way to use those higher blends. And this program offers us an opportunity to do that. I'm going to also remind everybody, too, besides the ethanol, when you take those kernels of corn down there and you take the starch out and you produce ethanol, you also get a DDG, a distiller's dried grains that is used as a feed product, used all across the state and actually shipped around the world as well. And those ethanol plants produce a feed product that is very, very valuable, increasingly different as well. And so it's great for many parts of our state's economy. So as a state, we'll continue to support locally produced biofuels. It's very important to our state's future. Certainly thank the Governor and Lieutenant Governor for their leadership and turn it over to Director of DOT, Paul Trambino.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's very exciting, especially for the department to be a part of this and to be here for the Fueling Our Future announcement. You know, as DOT Director, the Governor and Lieutenant Governor have asked me to explore various avenues to help Iowa's economy to continue to expand, to create jobs and grow family incomes. With this new program, a pilot project, really, we have already had conversations on to how to expand this effort to help with higher blend fuels of biodiesel. Currently, as you've heard, Iowa is number one in the nation when it comes to biodiesel production. And knowing the Governor and Lieutenant Governor, I think they want to retain that spot as being number one in the nation, with more than a dozen biodiesel refineries that are capable of producing 17% of the United States' total biodiesel output, the industry has a great foundation. And this program really takes it, I think, to the next step. We hope to continue the conversations regarding biodiesel, in addition to encouraging additional Midwestern states to look at similar ethanol and biodiesel programs in their state. Before I end, I'd also like to recognize the Renewable Fuels Association, the Petroleum Marketers of Iowa, the Governor's Biofuels Coalition, and other stakeholders in this room today that really helped make the program possible and really what it is. Thank you again for joining us today and your support in the biofuels industry. So thank you very much.
I think one thing that is significant is, unlike Washington, D.C., where they're always fighting and you have this big clash going on between big oil and renewable energy, we actually have Petroleum Marketers and the Renewable Energy Association cooperating here in Iowa, working together. And also that's obviously very beneficial both to our economy, to our farmers, and also to our environment. So with that, we'd open it to your questions.
How many blender pumps are there right now?
Harold, did we have, through the Renewables Infrastructure Board, they have funded, is it 58 blender pumps? There are also some others that have been put out there as well. Well, in this case, it will depend on what the proposals are. So part of this program is certainly blender pumps, but it's also analyzing what we can do to get more use of E30, the higher blends. And so right now, there's $250,000 in this program. That program is funded actually now, state funded at $2.5 million or so that goes to projects, blender pumps, and there is more opportunity for application in for that funding as well for additional blender pumps.
This is also an opportunity for consumers to be able to get fuel at less cost. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at the cost of, say, 80, 85, there were times this year that was $1 a gallon less than regular gasoline or even E10. So this is an opportunity to give consumers more choice. I recently had a letter the editor published in the Wall Street Journal saying, really, renewable fuels have been a big hit among consumers in the state of Iowa, and we want to give them more choices. And we think, especially this E30 is kind of the sweet spot, and we think as people find out about this, we're going to see more interest, and obviously that is all in our interest since we have 41 ethanol plants in the state. Yes?
Can you burn E30 in any motor vehicle? Can you also burn that in all of your boats and lawnmowers and that kind of thing?
I don't think it's authorized to do that. No, you have to have a flexible fuel vehicle in order to use above E15 at this point in time. What's a flexible fuel vehicle? How long have you been in Iowa? Well, it's kind of truck that every member of the Highway Patrol has, flexible vehicles. My son has one. We've been trying to get, in Brazil, that's all they make is flexible fuel vehicles. Basically, and that's what the American automobile industry ought to be doing, the cost of a flexible fuel vehicle is maybe $100 more than one that isn't flexible fuel. It just gives you as a consumer more options as to what you're going to use as fuel. And I think in these flexible fuel vehicles on the on the gas tank, they'll have it in either yellow and green. Is that what they usually have, the gas cap in yellow or green? So you can check to see the color of what the gas cap is on your car, whether you got a flexible fuel vehicle or not. But I'd encourage everybody to buy flexible fuel vehicles in the future. The state, we started this when I was governor before, back in the 90s. I think Iowa has been one of the leaders in terms of our state fleet is all flexible fuel vehicles, I believe, or just about all.
Just about all.
So what percentage of the vehicles on the road are flexible fuel, or how big is this market?
It's a growing market, and it's something that we want to encourage more to do, about 10% at this point. But, you know, here's an opportunity, I think, where and actually, I can tell you, I remember when Howard Buffett and Kay Orr and I went to Detroit way back when Kay Orr was the governor in Nebraska to talk to the automobile industry about encouraging this. And this is something I think, unfortunately, sometimes they've been slower than I think it would have been wise to. But they don't seem to have a problem making flexible fuel vehicles for Brazil. So if they can do it for Brazil, they ought to be able to do it for America.
So you think about 10% of Iowans on the road would have vehicles?
In Iowa, it's probably higher than that. I don't know. But I would guess it's probably higher here in Iowa because of the interest in the state. But it's about 10% is what Monty says nationwide. So it is growing. It's 25% today. I think when Kay Orr and I went to Detroit, it was probably less than 1%. So, you know, sometimes it takes a while for these things to catch on. But we think the more choice you can give to consumers, the better, and the more opportunity, especially with the fuel fluctuations. You know, when you see gas prices in Chicago were over $5 earlier this year. They were nearing $4 here. Now they're down to a more reasonable level, but we know it jumps around a lot. So this gives consumers more flexibility and more opportunity to have something that is both renewable and better for the environment as well as less costly.
How much
This is federal dollars being redirected. It's a federal grant that we've received that would be redirected for this purpose. The state has already put resources into this program. And as you've heard, we have, over 50 pumps already that are flexible fuel pumps around the state.
That's $202,000?
Yes.
Yeah. Other questions?
Governor, one of the people who hope to succeed you has called for a special session of the legislature to address federal shutdown issues, supplementing the food banks, the food pantries, things like that. There's been some layoffs in state agencies as a result of this. Do you see a need there to legislature back?
Well, that's expensive to call the legislature back, especially in light of the fact that I think so far the state of Iowa has handled the situation pretty well. We've been able to minimize the impact. In fact, over the weekend, we heard they were going to close the Gold Star Museum. We've got a plan to keep that open, just as other governors have kept their national parks open, like Grand Canyon and the Statue of Liberty. We think the Gold Star Museum, so we found a way to keep that open, and we've continued to look at ways we can try to minimize the impact of this. I think the last thing we need to do is bring the legislature back to wait on the Congress. I mean, the Congress is bad enough. We have a history in Iowa of getting things done, and I think it's best that we continue to monitor the situation and determine what is in the best interest of the people of Iowa. And I don't think a special session of the legislature is in the best interest of the people of Iowa at this time.
Governor, just in relation,
well, as you know, the looming deadline on the debt ceiling is coming up later this week. And I think it is critical that the president work with the Congress. This has been something that's come up many times over the last several decades. And the president and the Congress have always been able to reach agreement on resolving these. That needs to be done. And instead of refusing to meet with each other, and instead of refusing to compromise, they need to come together, just like we did in the last legislative session. We were successful. Now, I put together a very focused agenda, but at the end of the day, we knew we had to compromise. We compromised with Senate Democrats and House Republicans and passed something that I think was very good for Iowa. Biggest property tax cut in Iowa history, major reform of education that's going to improve education, K-12, public and private, higher education. We also passed our health and wellness plan, which puts us in a position of really doing things that are going to help people, improve people's health, not just have more people covered. So I would encourage the President and the Congress to look at what we've done and what other governors have done to balance their budgets and to make the tough decisions, put the country back on track towards a balanced and responsible fiscal policy. Well, there's a lot of speculation about that, and you can watch any of the weekend shows on television, and you'll hear a lot of different people that have different perspectives. I think most people agree that defaulting on our debt is not a good thing, and it should be resolved, and it's the responsibility of the President and the Congress to resolve it, and the sooner they do, the better for everybody.
Are you going to run out of money in state agencies, though?
Well, we're going to continue to do everything we can, and I don't think we're going to run out of money in state agencies. We're going to continue to monitor the situation and make adjustments as we need to. As we said, when stupid things like closing the World War II Memorial or the Gold Star Museum happen, I think we got to try to do things to try to prevent that from happening. It seems to me like the federal government is just trying to make things worse and more inconvenient. We instead try to do what we can to deliver services in the most common sense, responsible way we can.
Do you think that you'll be able to continue to do that indefinitely? Or
well, no, not indefinitely, but we do think that Well, first of all, let's see what happens and see this week what occurs. I think, obviously, once we get past the 17th, that's another deadline that we have to look at. But we know the way the federal government operates. I wouldn't be surprised if it might be a day or two past the deadline before they act. That doesn't surprise me, but hopefully it won't be weeks and months.
I was just curious, too, just outside of your jobs, have you or the lieutenant governor noticed anything in your personal lives
our family had planned a picnic at Cottonwood, which is managed by the Corps of Engineers. We have a fall chili feed each year, and so we ended up going to my wife's sister's house instead of going to Cottonwood. The weather wasn't very good that day anyway. That was not last weekend, but the weekend before. So we had to change that. And you know, you could have gone to a state park as well, but we ended up going to Chris's sister Mary's house because, well, the weather wasn't very nice anyway.
And I guess we're living it personally because Kevin is a district soil conservationist with NRCS, so he has been furloughed since the 1st of October.
I guess I'm not familiar with the details of this arbitrator's decision, so we'll have to review that to determine. And again, when did this come out? And this came out in August. Okay, I would assume that our Department of Administrative Services could give us a briefing on this, but I really don't want to comment without knowing the details of the decision. The lieutenant governor is supporting her friend Joni Ernst because they've been longtime friends. In fact, even when Joni considered running for county office, she consulted with Kim. They served together in county office. Kim represented the district that included Montgomery County, where Joni's from. And when Kim was elected lieutenant governor, she encouraged Joni to run for in the special election for that Senate seat. And I think Joni's done a great job, and so that's really a matter of personal friendship, and I, as an individual, am not endorsing any candidate in the primary. I intend to support the Republican nominee. I want to make sure that we nominate the strongest candidate, and I believe that the last thing we need is another congressman in the United States Senate. And what Mr. Braley had to say last week, I think, indicates how out of touch he is, and how much he's tied into the congressional perk system. And we need somebody that really is an Iowa problem solver, not a congressional insider.
You're talking about the Tuttle comment?
Yeah.
Where do we stand right now with the waivers for the Iowa health
law? Well, we're very encouraged because Secretary Sebelius said something, I think, on the radio that said that she was inclined to improve the Iowa waiver. We take her at her word, and we know the federal government is shut down and they've got a lot of problems, and they're dealing with a massive mishandling or lack of the whole federal implementation of Obamacare. So I'm sure she's got a lot of big headaches to deal with, but we're very optimistic and hopeful that they're going to approve the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan. We are moving forward with it. By the way, people can sign up for that on the Department of Human Services website, and that is going smoothly, unlike what's happening with the federal system.
So people are signing up?
Yes,
yep.
They are.
Yep.
Yeah. Michael, we're having you want to give an update on that? Why don't you come up here, Mike?
So we've had hundreds of Iowans already sign up, with thousands of Iowans already visiting the website that we set up and built specifically for eligibility, not only for Iowa Medicaid, but for the programs that we offer and that the state of Iowa promises to deliver and that we continually deliver on. And what we've seen is not only hundreds of Iowans sign up, but we also have an IowaCare population whose incomes we will verify, that we will also be adding to the rolls and signing them up this month and alerting them to that eligibility for the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan so that they can begin the process of also having their incomes verified but signing up and getting kind of adjusted to the plan. So as Governor Branstad mentioned, we're very optimistic about the talks we've had with HHS, and we are looking forward to approval.
What's the website?
The federal website. What's it called?
Healthcare.gov. Yeah, the federal website, healthcare.gov, is where the problems have been. And again, we don't have any control over that. That's run by the federal government, and I think it's been a big frustration for a lot of people, and we certainly understand and appreciate that. I also know that our insurance commissioner, Nick Gerhardt, has worked very hard to try to keep people informed and encourage people to continue to be patient. Yep.
A series of alternatives to a fuel tax increase for infrastructure. I'm wondering, since you're both here, if you might be able to preview some of those alternatives.
We have had a review. We're just fine-tuning a couple of issues that we're working through, so we expect very shortly here to be moving out and talking with some of the key stakeholders. So
that's a no.
Yeah, it's a no.
And I think, let me just say, we are not endorsing this. We're saying these are a series of ideas and options to be considered, and we want to see if a bipartisan consensus can be built among legislators and stakeholders on this issue. So over the next several months, over the months of October, November, December, Paul is going to be visiting with different groups and with Iowans all over the state and also with legislators, and then we'll see. But I will say that from what we've seen, the Lieutenant Governor and I, we think that he's come up with some innovative ideas that take a new approach towards dealing with this need for additional funding for the road use tax. But I would also compliment Paul on the fact that they're still moving projects ahead. And despite some of the challenges, unlike Illinois and Missouri, which are mired in debt and most of their money is going to pay interest, we don't have that problem at the state level in Iowa. And the good news is that with the resources we have, he's found ways to reduce administrative costs and see more money goes to our roads.
Thanks, Governor. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.